Welcome to the Pilates Progressions Program. I'm Katrina Fo, your host for tonight, and I'm excited to be with you. And tonight we're going to answer some questions that you all have sent in, and I have a whole bunch of quite a variety of different things. If, of course, you would like to talk to me live, whether you have a specific question about client, a part of anatomy that is confusing you, or an exercise that is just not clicking all the way, please feel free to call in. The number, of course, is 347-838-9945. And, of course, you're always welcome to email the questions in ahead of time. But I do enjoy calling people calling in because it is an easy way for me to get feedback and we can discuss things a little more in depth. So this is your show. It's for you to get your questions answered, and hopefully they're helpful. All right. I'm going to just first off mention that this weekend at Personalized Pilates in Scottsdale, Arizona, we have Reformer 3 module of the basic training going on. If you've never done the advanced Reformer work, this is the place to go. You got all the classical advanced Reformer stuff. It's all day Friday, all day Saturday. You can still register. Make sure that you don't go work out tomorrow. Take it easy, though, and make sure you get a good night's sleep because it'll kick your butt. It's a lot of heavy work, hard stuff, especially those hip extensors, full range of flexion extension of that spine, the really fun stuff. Be ready, though, so you know, make sure you bring some munchies to sustain you and you're wide awake, alert, enthusiastic. All right, so on that line, we're going to jump right into our first question. Let's see what we've got here. Okay. She writes, hi, Katrina. This may be a weird question. Yesterday, I was sitting in a long first aid course, crossing my legs right over left. When I switched legs, I realized the left side was harder to cross. Does this mean a muscle on my left side is tighter? Which muscle would it be? Honestly, I promise I was paying close attention in class. Smiley face. Well, I'm sure you were, but first off, before I answer your question, I just want to say this is exactly where I want you all to go and where I want you to inspire your clients to go is to just be aware of your body in daily life and notice little things like this. These little discrepancies between one side of your body and the other and noticing changes in your body as you continue and deepen your practice, you know, as you go through life, things happen, you know, car accidents, pregnancies, you know, just menopause, whatever it is that you're going through will have an effect on your body. And you want to stay in touch with it and see, oh, this new running regimen I have is having this effect. You know, notice these things. So I think that's fantastic, and I'm not upset that you weren't paying attention in class. These things just pop up. Okay, so back to the question. Sorry for the bunny trail, but again, really important. And the more you can encourage your clients to think about this stuff, you guys probably already do this innately, but to have them direct their attention, the more mindful they're going to be, and the more they're going to get out of their Pilates, which means the more they're going to love you. All right, so crossing your legs left over right. Well, first off, I just have to say I'm not really sure what that means because it could mean you're sitting up and it's like the girly cross legs, like you're sitting in a chair. And in that case, it would probably be your abductors, and I mean the outside of your hip. So the other position it could be is like if you're Taylor Singh. So if you're sitting on the floor and you're sitting, they call it crisscross applesauce, Indian style, Taylor sitting, whatever it is. But again, they also call that cross legs, which is very confusing. If you guys haven't noticed, you say cross your legs when you're cueing a client, you'll get all sorts of different things. About half of them will do one thing, half will do the other. And depending on the position you're in, you got to be very clear. So personally, cross legs does not usually work well, and I tend to go for the Indian style, even though it's not a PC term. Okay, so if you're sitting, you know, crisscross applesauce, I know, I hate that term, probably it's your deep external hip rotators. And again, it kind of depends on the position you're sitting in. Either one of them, it could be that, but that would be my first guess. So the deep external hip rotators, you've got all six of them, you know, probably glute max as well, would be a little bit in that. So for that, yes, your left side is tighter. Those muscles on that side are going to be tighter. And what you could do is just sit more with that side being crossed. I mean, sometimes it's just that simple. But if you want some really great specific stretches, typically, you know, like a good piriformis stretch, like the piriformis stretch exercise on the chair would be a great one from the P3 program. That's not a classical exercise, but it's a great one. Doing the feet and strap series, we have the strap on the opposite foot, and you internally rotate and cross it over. That's going to get those deep external hip rotators in a really kind of way. All sorts of different things like that. Anytime, my favorite is, I think in yoga they call it the double pigeon. Totally not a yoga person. You'd have to ask my sister on that one. It's where you're sitting cross-legged, like crisscross applesauce, but instead of having one ankle crossed over the other one, the ankle is on top of the other knee. You want to have the foot hanging freely so you're not just getting an ankle stretch, but that will take your hip to a whole new place. And again, that is a passive stretch, but sometimes it's nice, you know, if you're sitting in a first aid class to be able to do some kind of a stretch like that versus a more active stretch when we're in Pilates, which are some of the exercises I mentioned before. So I'm sure you guys can think of lots of others. If you have questions or want more, let me know, and hopefully that helps. You also might notice that your IT band is tighter on that side. Again, there's a lot of connecting with that glute max and that IT band and such. But without actually watching you move and doing some active things, I couldn't say for sure. So that's my non-definite answer, but I'll give you an idea where to start looking for that. Okay, so hopefully that made sense to everybody. The next question I have is a little bit more involved. It's a little bit more controversial, and it's a follow-up question. So in the past couple of weeks, we've been talking with an instructor who has a client that does powerlifting, and they have had their powerlifting coach questioning and not understanding the whole Pilates breathing and the core connection and everything. So we have talked about how she can help educate not only the client but the coach with teaching them about, you know, diaphragmatic breathing, meaning belly breathing, versus ribcage breathing, which is what we do in Pilates, and why that's important for the core. So you can go back and listen to those, but that's just going to generally catch you up. So this client wrote back to her, I can see how this works for general fitness attributes, but the breathing is counterintuitive to how I breathe and how I use my breathing to lift heavy weights. I project my core outwards to brace myself for lifting and belly breathe normally. I appreciate the idea of neutral spine and pelvis, though. Can we do a program where it's pretty much just stretching, joint mobilization, flexibility-based without stressing the breathing too much? I'm definitely not against the principles of Pilates in general, just some aspects of it seem to be incompatible with what I'm trying to achieve. Thanks. And then the instructor wrote, I'm a bit confused as to how I should reply. He's a great client and I hate to lose him, but I don't feel he's understanding body mechanics. Why do weightlifters project their core out? How does this work more than in? I know they have a belt on. Does pushing against the belt make them stronger? It just seems wrong. All right, so first off, I just want to say that I would agree with you, but I want to go into more depth than that. So I want to explain to you a little bit what's going on here and what he's talking about, and it is very controversial, even within the weightlifting world. There's what the power weightlifters do, and then the regular weightlifters, and then like the CrossFitters, and they'll can argue and what type of belt you use. Again, in Pilates, this is just basically good body mechanics. We're training for real life. We're not training to lift 5 gazillion pounds here like he is. We are training for functional fitness, they call it, you know, real life. Joe wanted you to be able to just live your daily life and not, you know, have to dodge a car and, like, throw your back out or, you know, bend over to pick something up and, oh, there, you can't move, you can't stand up. You know, that's the kind of stuff we're training for is real life, not aesthetics and not, you know, the certain end goal of being able to lift so much weight kind of thing. To me, I think that the weightlifting stuff, it's nice to have goals, and having the numbers on the weights is really kind of fun. I think sometimes people take it a little too far and lose sight of the point, and they'll kind of sacrifice their body for an aesthetic or a goal and missed the point. So the point is to have a healthier life and have less injuries. Now, this is not his goal. So this is where the crux of the problem comes in. Your goal for him is not the same as his goal for him. And as an instructor, this is a very tricky customer service issue. You want to make sure that you're honoring to what his goal is, because it's his body. He has to live with it. And, you know, you can educate him as much as possible. But at the end of the day, if he doesn't want to do what you want him to do and what you think is right for him, you can't force him. And he will walk away. So you can impart what you want and explain what you want, but unless you're willing to just lose a client on a moral principle, you know, you're going to have to compromise a little bit. Now, I want to just say here, because some of you may think I'm a sellout for saying, you know, you kind of got to go along and, you know, maybe compromise on this. You, even if you let go of the breath, are going to be doing a lot more good for his body than if you weren't working with him. Okay, so I just want that to resonate with you and think about that aspect, because you can still train him good biomechanics and you can still talk maybe more about the aspects of why the ribcage breathing is important without having to beat him over the head with the ribcage breathing, because obviously he's getting to the point where he's bristling against it. You can talk about cross-training and how doing different things to your body will actually help improve and enhance. You know, instead of just shortening the muscles, lengthening them is good. You know, he understands that component, so kind of transfer that logic aspect to it. Maybe that'll help. And who knows, maybe over time, just basic understanding and being around you, talking about things, could change his mind. But overall, you are doing more good for his body by not just having the powerlifting as his only thing and having, you know, the full range motion of the joints that you're focusing on. Okay, so that was kind of my customer service aspect of how to handle this. In terms of the actual mechanics of what's going on, what he's describing is called a Valsalva maneuver. So this is a term that a lot of times people use in weightlifting. It's actually like the belly breathing combined with a Valsalva maneuver is what he's doing. So you inhale by contracting your diaphragm, and so the diaphragm will then be pushing downward, so it's that lowering motion, and that creates pressure in your abdominal cavity, and because your guts and your belly are all pushing outward, that belly breathing, against your skin and muscles, and so when you contract your abs, you're providing even firmer surface that allows you to create more pressure, and so that keeps your core solid. But what they're doing is they're kind of bearing down. They're trying to create this pressure by pushing their diaphragm down and holding things in and kind of, it's a tricky thing to explain, but I think you probably know what I'm saying when I just say bear down and just hold your breath and kind of push out. Okay, here's where it gets tricky is that almost every fitness journal, credentialing, whatever, warns against doing this because the Valsalva maneuver has been shown to also elevate your blood pressure when you do this bearing down. And especially if people have high blood pressure already, this could have some serious implications that I think you can just, you know, guess. So you want to be really careful, and he should probably understand that if he's doing the Valsalva maneuver, there are dangers and such. In terms of the weight belt, what the weight belt is doing is it's adding some extra pulling in motion to kind of prevent the belly from pushing out too far so that they can push against it and get more stability with that. Now, that's kind of in some ways really important if he's lifting ridiculous amounts of weight, which it sounds like he probably is with this powerlifting. But in terms of it being functional, it's not. How often do you want to have to push out and bear down in daily life? I mean, that's way overkill for daily life. And if you don't train yourself for daily life, how are you going to live, you know, around, you know, walk around and do stuff? It's not really transferable. So I want to just take a second and go back to why do we work our core? Okay, so this, we talked about this a lot in the P3 program, in the basic, was it week four, core and neutral, as well as in the breathing week five. But when you're doing this, the core is most important. It's got two things. It acts as a stabilizer, okay? And so that's kind of what we're talking about with this whole thing. He's doing it and creating this pressing out motion, bearing down on the diaphragm to create that same stabilizing. So he's doing it in a different way. Instead of pulling the belly in and letting the diaphragm going up, he's doing the opposite. But the core is not just about holding still and stabilizing. And that's what a lot of people now in current fitness don't get. That's kind of the first level. So holding your spine still and doing something like a plank or something where you're holding it still is really great. And for a lot of people that have back issues, that's a great place to start. It's the safest place, and it's really important to start there. However, your core should be working all the time when you're just doing daily activities. So it also acts as a force transfer center. So it's not necessarily moving your body or creating movement. It's transferring the force, like from the lower body to the upper body, or upper body to the lower body, or right side to the left side, or vice versa. And it's very important to have that core, because your core is the center. It's kind of the hub of everything going on in your body, all your extremities, and you want to have that very strong and solid. And you want to be able to do it with the pulling in. And just simply from an aesthetic point, this usually is what will win all the ladies over, is that, you know what, you are what you train. If you train your belly pushing out, you will get a belly that pushes out and just kind of stays there. And if you train pulling it in, guess what? It trains pulling in, and it will stay there. I have had so many male clients, and I don't know why, but the males in particular are really prone to this. There's one older guy that just really... I remember this very, very distinctly, and he wasn't a weightlifter ever, but he had, it looked like a kind of a beer belly-ish thing, but when he did his ab work, it was hard as a rock, and he had just trained it to go out, because he had kind of pushed out all the time, you know, for years, and he was like in the 60s, so it was always like that, and it was so hard. I mean, to get him to pull in, oh, my goodness. It took so long. I mean, neurologically, he didn't have that capacity to be pulling in. And no matter what exercise or what cues, it was foreign. And so once I finally knew he understood it and was sending the right messages to his body, it still took a very long time before things slowly started to change. So, again, when things are very ingrained, it's a hard thing. So, as a fitness person, as a health practitioner, whatever you want to call it, my advice to him would be to do both, because neurologically you're training your body to have other options. Okay, so this is more his training for daily life, kind of undo some of the things that might be going on with the weightlifting versus, you know, training for that specific aesthetic, specific sport, whatever you want to look at it as, which is needs a very specific talent, but that talent may not be what's best for his body. So analogy would be, think of, I don't know, like a baseball player, okay, a pitcher, okay? A pitcher is going to be needing a very extreme range of motion of that arm that does the throwing, and a lot of power and a lot of ranges that, let's face it, not normal, not good for the body. And it will break down, period. And he's going to need a lot of work undoing what he does for a living. And it doesn't, by undoing, I mean balancing things so that it doesn't get out of balance and cause an injury. Not undoing like it takes away from or detracts all his training. Another example would be ballerinas. Ballerinas are usually super paranoid about trying to get more flexible. And, you know, if you do anything to strengthen them, they think, oh, no, you might be undoing my flexibility. All you want to do is stretch. It's kind of weird because if you actually talk to them and see, like, how far, you know, they can go past the splits, usually they can go very far. And so I'm like, okay, so you can do splits, no big deal, right? Yeah. Okay, well, can you stand up and hold your leg next to your ear in the splits? No. Okay, well, then the issue is not flexibility. The issue is strength. Okay, let's stabilize those joints that you're getting this crazy ranging. Let's not just, you know, lay in way past the splits and release into it. Let's strengthen and get the muscles to be able to hold it up there so that when you stand up, you can hold that leg next to your ear because you have the range already. Okay, so my point being with those examples, and there's a zillion examples, these sports that people like to do, they demand, if you're going to work at a high level, a competitive level, you need to work really hard and in ranges and strength aspects that are not normal. And so Pilates can help prevent injuries by taking some of those imbalances and bring them a little more balanced. It's not going to undo the training, the sport-specific training that they're doing. It's going to prevent the injuries. The idea of cross-training, okay? So making sure that you don't just run those joints ragged in ways that are great for your sport and not undo it and keep the muscles good. So if that helps, great. There's a lot of controversy over wearing the weight belts, and I won't even get into all those. There's different types of belts and such and how they breathe and everything, and it's very tricky. So I am not a weightlifter. I don't use a weightlifting belt, nor would I, because honestly, I don't want to do something that is not natural for my body. And by natural, I mean I don't want to have to rely on the outside assistance of an external mechanism. I want to use my internal core that God gave me to be able to do the stuff. And if I can't do it with that, then personally, I think it's too much for my body, and I don't want to risk an injury. That's my own personal opinion, okay? So what you choose to say to him, I mean, not that I would say he should go powerlifting without a belt, because it sounds like he's probably lifting more weight than he should do without a belt. He needs that, but he just needs to cross-train his body. So it is diaphragmatic breathing with a Valsalva maneuver. For those of you that want to Google that and learn more, and again, you'll find it's very controversial. Okay, hopefully that helped and cleared up some confusion and gave you some tips. But again, go back to the customer service aspect, how you talk to them, and, you know, whether you fire him or not, I wouldn't recommend it, because you are doing a lot of good for him, and it's really important that people are out there like you explaining the anatomy and how to take good care of your body, because most clients, their idea of health is whatever they read in the magazines. It's whatever looks good. It's whatever, you know, I have these goals to attain, these benchmarks of, you know, I can do this many push-ups, or I can, you know, do this or that. And that's not really what health is. To me, health is about having the joints have the least amount of pressure on them so that I have longevity and I will be able to, you know, keep going when I'm a grandma. That, to me, is a good idea of health. So going back to kind of your new client assessment discussion and stuff in the P3 program, and really looking at what are the client's goals and what is their definition of health and helping them to attain it, you might want to, you know, think about educating them if they have some really wonky ideas of what health is. But I think more and more people are getting a better idea of health. People are looking at diet and health and fitness more balanced, but not super balanced. There's still all this idea that you have to do hours and hours of cardio, and you have to restrict calories, and in order to have a good physique and health. And that, again, those are aesthetic things. They're not necessarily about true health and what is going to bring health to the body. So you always want to look at the full thing. All right, so that's enough on my soapbox, but I would just handle that very graciously and respectfully, and just do what you can with him. And I would maybe leave it alone for a little while and just work on what you can with him. Okay, so the next question is, Katrina, what is the best cue to stop someone from locking/hyperextending their knees? I've tried several things, even telling/showing them, but they still do it. I need more cues in my arsenal. Happy face. Thanks. This is a great, great question. So I'm going to take a second and I'm going to explain the hyperextending their knees mechanism a little bit. We talk about this usually in the training modules and especially in the anatomy module, but it's usually very confusing for most people. So the knee joint, you have, I'm going to go over it very simply. So there's more muscles in this, but the big ones I'm going to hit on. You have the quads that extend the knee, so they straighten it. And you have the hamstrings in the back that bend the knee, so they flex it. And the straight up and down position, the two bones, tibia and the femur, should be at 180 degrees. Now, some people, because of their natural structure, the length of their ligaments, it'll slightly bend backwards. Okay, that's not necessarily a great thing. And that's what we call hyperextended. So it goes past that 180 degrees. Now, even if you don't have that structure, you can have a problem hyperextending your knees. So I just want to highlight this because a lot of instructors just look at it to see if they're hyperextending their knees, and you can hyperextend your knees without being in hyperextension. Okay, so let that kind of your mind wrap around that. So what I mean is that when grip their quads, okay, so they're extending their knee, and they let go of the muscles in the back, those hamstrings, what they're doing is the quads are driving the knee backwards, and there's nothing stopping it from going that direction except the ligaments. So it's kind of a lazy position, if you will. It's a rest kind of position, and you're leaning on the ligaments. You're hanging on those ligaments. And there's a lot of different positions in the body that you can do this, whether it's kind of, you know, sinking into one hip or, you know, hyperextension of the knees, elbows, whatever. But when you drive that back, eventually over time, maybe not today, maybe not next month, maybe not in 2 years, but eventually those ligaments are going to get overstretched. And this is particularly important for pregnant women because, as you know, we talk a lot about this in the P3 program, you have the relaxin hormone that's going through the body from the moment that egg implants into the uterus, so that's before they actually know they're pregnant, all the way through delivery as long as they are lactating. So for myself, that's been for the last 9 years. Because I haven't taken a break from being pregnant or nursing, it's always been going. And so, again, that's an issue. You want to know how long your client has been lactating or, you know, pregnant or whatever, because it can be a very long time. Now, when you're resting and leaning on those ligaments, even if you're not pregnant and having that relax and go through, it is doing some damage. And, again, you think of all the knee issues that people have, this is a really big deal. So then the question is, what do I do about it? All right, so whether you have a client that has that hypermobility and can go into that hyperextended position or not, when their legs are straight, they need to have their hamstrings in the back and the quads in the front. Think of it like a panini pressing. You know, you've got the buns, meaning of the bread, in the back, the hamstrings, and the bun in the front, the quads, kind of squishing together on that knee joint, and that's bringing stability to it. So it's squeezing together, not one side, not the other side, but together in harmony, working as a team. Okay, so the beautiful thing about this is not that hard in the Pilates studio. In the general gym and fitness studio, this is like a huge thing. Okay, so I want to explain to you what they usually say. This is the easy dumbed-down cue. How do you get your hamstrings to turn on if you're worried about hyperextension? Okay, all the anatomy that I just explained to you. Exactly. I know you've got it in your head, and you're probably saying it out loud right now, but the way you do is you bend your knee. Mm-hmm. And so what do you hear in the gym all day long? What do you hear in all the fitness magazines and all the videos and stuff? Soften your knee. Bend your knee slightly. Okay, that is the stupid, dumbed-down way of saying turn your hamstrings on. All right? Now, if I was making a DVD or something and I was not right there with my client, or if I knew my client had, you know, zero body awareness, yeah, that's a great cue because you know what? It's less difficult to mess up. Okay, they're going to be in a safer position because you know that hamstring is turned on, so you've got that sandwiching of the knee joint. Here's the problem. In daily life, you need to be able to use your leg in a full range of motion, and that means and includes going through a straight leg position. So you want to train it in a full range of motion in the safe place that they're in, right, in the gym. That's where they've got an instructor watching them and helping them. They're paying a lot of money, and that's your job. Your job is to train their body to be safe and to have strength in the full range of motion that they're going to go through in daily life. Every step of the gait phase, which we talked about a little bit last week, every step of that gait phase, you should go through a completely straight leg. And that's going to give you the push-off of the gait phase. And you want that. You need that. And so you must have some training with that. The other thing that I explain to people is that if you're going to progress all the way to the full advanced version of Pilates, it's just dangerous if you can't keep your leg fully straight. And I don't mean locked. I mean straight. So you start doing snake or twist, which we're actually going to talk about a little bit. It's not possible unless you keep your legs straight. It's dangerous. I would not let a client do the, you know, pull-up on the chair if they don't keep their legs straight. It's dangerous. Same thing with a lot of the advanced exercises, which you guys will learn in Reformer 3 if you're going there this weekend. You want to be able to do that. Okay, plus, again, it's just functional, full range of motion. All right, so what does that mean? That means that you need to teach your clients how to turn their hamstrings on while their leg is straight and not lean and rest on the ligaments. Okay, this is the tricky thing, and you probably, the person that asked this question, knows all this stuff. I just wanted to take this opportunity to remind you of the mechanics behind the knee joint. Okay, so with Pilates, the best way to teach them this, in my opinion, and again, everybody will have a different opinion about this, my favorite way is to have the client stand against a wall so they're maybe a few inches away and they do a roll down. Okay, as they're doing this, if they're leaning on their ligaments, their butt's going to go and hit the wall. Okay, now, if they have to take like 10 steps out and they're really reaching their butt back, again, it's a sign. If you see their toes lose the weight, so they rock back and have all their weight on their heels and their toes kind of get lift off, they've lost it. Okay, so this is what you're saying. So, again, it depends on what position you're talking in. Right now we're talking about standing weight bearing. If you're doing, say, the hamstring stretch on the chair, again, it's the same basic exercise. Against the wall just gives you the feedback of whether your butt's poking out. But if I'm being a lazy instructor, I'll just stand behind the client and say, don't touch me. I am a wall with wet paint on it. Don't touch me. You know, whatever works for you. The other cue, and that's going to get their pelvis to tuck under, which is caused partially by the hamstrings pulling those sits bones down. Okay. The other cue that works really well from a standing position is keep the weight on the toes. And again, these are things that people can really relate to. They're very external to give them feedback of whether they're doing it or not. If you have a client that is very in touch with their body, you can say keep your hamstrings turned on. But again, I don't think you would ask this question if you had a client that was very in touch with their body. So keep your weight on your toes, even with your heels. It's a great cue. Those two things are great for standing. If you are doing something lying, the other classic place that people do this funky stuff is if they're doing the reformer footwork. So whatever the foot position, I don't care. It's all the same thing. They get this, like, snappy thing in their knee. Here's what's going on. In their mind, they're thinking straighten and bend the knees. And that could be because the instructor said straighten and bend the knees, because that's usually a very, you know, straightforward cue. And when people snap their knees out, and they're focusing on that joint. So change what joint you're focusing on. Okay, if you want the hamstrings to connect, yes, the hamstrings are working in that exercise, but that's not what you're cueing. You're cueing the quads when you say straighten the knee, because that's what they do. The hamstrings are lengthening and letting go. So when you say straighten the knee, you're actually inadvertently telling the hamstrings to let go. So that's the problem. If you talk about what the hamstrings are doing, you can actually get a little more success for most people. So what that means is one of my favorite cues is I'll say lengthen your legs. And I want you to feel the back of your thighs way up, you know, right under your gluteal fold, that crease under your butt cheeks. I want you to think of the top of your hamstrings, the top of your thighs touching the carriage. So immediately their focus shifts from the knees straightening up to their hips opening. You could also talk about the front of their hips and their hip flexors opening up, because that's happening as well. And again, that shifting the focus. So the hamstrings are moving to extend the hip on that exercise. But most people are talking about the knees extending. You see the shift there? If you want to think more imagery, one of my favorite images is to think of lengthening the legs, like your legs are two pieces of taffy and you're stretching them longer versus straighten the knees kind of thing. And again, we're focusing on the length. You can talk about cues like see how far you can stretch those springs. It focuses on that length aspect versus the down of the knees aspect. And if you snap the knees down, you're not going to get as much length of the springs as if you keep it going out, out, out. Okay, so try those, see how they work. Try and think some other positions it's really common in. I'm not thinking of any off the top of my head. Those are the two places that I really see it the most. So if there's another place that you're experiencing a different exercise that you're having your client have problems, send it to me. Let me know, because off the top of my head, that's what I come up with. So if it's something different, totally let me know. Hopefully that was helpful. Okay, here is something that someone wanted to share, and I love this. So I'm going to read this to you, and you can try this from her own words because I think it's fun. She wrote, "Hi, Katrina. I just thought I'd share this new-to-me version of Mermaid on the Reformer. I saw it on a Pilates Anytime class. You sit on the Reformer," and she put in parentheses, "facing left, in mermaid legs with the blue spring on. Grab the short strap with your right hand and square your shoulders so your arm is in position to do drawing a sword. Perform draw a sword. When your arm is straight, let the arm come up overhead as you side bend into mermaid. Once you've gone as far as you can, round forward and then come up to sitting tall to start the movement over again." I hope my cueing skills are okay and this made sense. I really enjoyed this version because I thought the stretch was so amazing, so I'm sharing. So from what I'm getting, this is a very fun version of Mermaid, and it's a really neat version, in my opinion, because your hand that is in a closed chain is so mobile. It's got that rope in it versus holding on to the foot bar. And that's kind of a fun thing. So it's going to take a lot more core connection to really, and not in a stabilized core that we talked about, but it's in a moving core aspect as you go in and out of the side bend. And then you've got this added flexion forward, which you can't really do quite the same if you're holding onto the foot bar. So fun, fun, fun. So try it and see what you think of it. And if you have questions, you can send them to me and I can send them to this other lady, or you can get on Pilates Anytime and try to find which one she's talking about. All right. Okay, so I have another question. She wrote, "Katrina, can you use the functional footprints and rotation discs interchangeably?" Fun question. So they look kind of the same. And if you haven't been on Balanced Body's website, the functional footprints are a balanced body thing. And they were developed, I believe, by Jean-Claude West, who's a Pilates instructor. And they have a different focus. Once you've tried them, you know instantly they're different. Larry is actually the expert on those. He has done a lot of work with the functional footprints, and it's really great. But, excuse me. The functional footprints are actually a combination of like a rotating disc and a wobble board. And it's a very subtle wobble board so that you can really get a feel for where you're holding your weight if you're standing on them. So if you're standing on them and you're kind of leaning back into your heels or on your toes, it is very, very apparent. And then if you have a very loose, I guess would be the word, rotational disc, so it can go flying around. So if you're standing on them, you find your balance, and just to turn the legs out and in, you can see dramatically which leg is stronger versus a rotational disc, because they're usually tighter gears. It's, I don't want to say working against you, but it has a very different feel to it, and you can't see it because your legs will just fly open. On the functional footprints, it's a little different in terms of actually using them. The other big difference on the functional footprints is that there's the ability to measure the degrees of how much rotation you have when you're rotating in and out. There's little gauges on the sides. I don't for lack of a better word. So you can see concretely how far you're going and how much progress you've made and such and things like that, which especially ballerinas love seeing their external rotation, how far they can go and the right versus the left and all that kind of thing. So if you're sitting down, there should be a degree of rotation that happens at the knee joint, which we usually never talk about because we don't want to encourage it for stability reasons. We want to make sure that's nice and stable. But if you have somebody that has too much, this can be a great tool to work on stabilizing it and working on that. So, for example, a lot of ballerinas do their turnout more from their knee and their ankle than from their hips. Or they compensate and do as much as they can at their hips, and then they also get some at their knee and ankle to make it as, you know, even more. And so you end up with ballerinas that have, you know, they're usually hypermobile anyways, and then they're working that hypermobility at the knee. And this is a great tool that you can use to work on keeping those knees stable if you do some of the work from a seated position with the functional footprints and trying to hold it. I remember the first time I ever was introduced to them, Nora St. John, who actually wrote all the balance body curriculum, she took me through a series on them, and my knees have a lot of rotation. and I was shocked. I was sore in those little intrinsic muscles in my knees the next day. It was amazing. But they're very different than the rotational discs. The rotational discs' strength and beauty lies more with how you can add them to equipment work. I mean, you can do a lot of really cool exercises with them just in and of themselves, and I'm going to give you some examples of those. But you can layer them on top of pieces of equipment. So you could do things like the standing splits and put them under your feet and do some fun movements with the leg, turning in and out as you're doing it. Again, that's a balance issue, so be careful who you do that with. You can do all sorts of stuff with the standing springs, you know, holding on to them and layering on internal external rotation of the legs while you're doing, you know, hug a tree or whatever. And I mean, you can get really creative with these and layer them to the exercises you already know and love. Elizabeth Larkham has multiple videos using those and tons of workshops. She is crazy creative with that. So if you want to check that out, I recommend her stuff, highly recommend her stuff. She's a very, very creative lady. In terms of some of my favorite things to do with them by themselves, not wise kind of way, one of my favorite series is if you lie down on them. I know this sounds really weird, but you want to get your sacrum square on one of the discs, and then you want kind of your like C7, C8 area and the base of your skull on the other. And you can put some towels on there so it's not hard as a rock. You know, if you put one on one of them, put it on both of them so they're nice and even. And then you can do this great size if you just put your legs up into tabletop and put your arms across your chest. So you're just getting your arms and legs out of the way. And you can try to, say, hold the bottom, your hips, rotational disc still, and just move the upper one. Then you can try holding the upper one still and just moving the bottom one. And then you can try doing both and moving the discs equally. And this is like such a hilarious, fun exercise to do with clients, and usually they're really good at one or really, you know, bad at the other. And it's a really great tool to try to, you know, work on keeping still the one they're good at moving and vice versa, because obviously we need to work on what we suck at, right? That's the name of the game. You can also do a really fun series on all fours. And again, you might want to keep the towels on top of them. And you can do the same series from the quadruped position. Personally, I like the laying down version, the prone one, supine one, because it's a little bit, I don't know, you feel the connection to the rotational disc a little more, and there's less moving parts in there, meaning the other joints of the wrists and the elbows and shoulders and all that stuff. So your knees are on one and your hands are on the other. And without doing, you know, weird shoulder hip things, you want to move one disc, kind of wag the tail, move the disc on your knees, and then hold that one still and move the other disc and turn the shoulder side to side, and then try to do both. And again, either one of these exercises is fantastic. This is my go-to if I have clients that have trouble on the corkscrew hip hiking, or if I have clients that do rotation instead of hip hiking on other exercises, because distinguishing between side bending and hip hiking from a really pure place where there's no arms and legs involved can be very, very difficult for people. And you'll notice when you're doing like pelvic clock, that's the first place you'll see this. You know, they can't rotate, they just hip hike. This might be a good place. Okay, this is side bending. Okay, now we're not going to do that. And maybe you do on the rotational discs. This would really blow their mind. You're in that quadruped position, say, on the rotational discs again, and you do the tail wag, a.k.a. hip circles, from the balanced body movement principle exercises. And again, we went over those in the P3 program. And get that going. I actually learned that exercise being called the porn star, which might be a little graphic, but what you're doing is rotation of the spine and moving the pelvis in rotation, not side bending. And so if they tend to side bend, you're going to see it because those discs are going to go flying. And if you try this, just a little side note, ideally your toes should be off and pointed feet so that they don't stabilize you. A lot of clients will cheat and they'll tuck their toes under and wow, they can keep that disc still. That's cheating. So don't do that. But these are very fun. You can also, one of my clients' favorite things, and I mean favorite, I can't get them out of the studio because they want to stay and play with us more. And I know you guys have clients that do that kind of stuff, but I'll have them stand up on top of it on one disc, both feet on one disc. And I have them cross their heart with their arms to just, you know, get the arms out of the way. And I'll tell them I want them to turn their torso, you know, to the right and then pull their hips underneath it. And keep doing that till you can turn all the way around, going that one direction. And this is a hoot in a group class. I would have contests to see who could turn, you know, around, especially in duets or trios and stuff. So much fun. And, you know, people start doing weird, you know, swatting the air things to try to cheat. And it gets very cool and fun and lighthearted, which, again, I think Joe liked that stuff too because, hello, we have things like, you know, the seal, you know, and this is very much along that line. So then once they get around, I have them stop without, you know, putting a foot down and go the other direction. And, oh, changing directions, it will just, you know, blow their mind. So it's a very fun exercise and very enjoyable. Those are some of my favorite things to do with the rotation discs that you have to have discs to do, obviously. So if you don't have discs, I'm sorry. But they are a lot of fun, and they're not based on classical Pilates exercises. But again, you have the same spinal movements. You've got the side bending, and then in this last one, you've got the rotation. I don't have specific names for these exercises, sorry. I'm sure you can think of some great ones, but they're a lot of fun. You can do a lot of great things with these. You also can do a lot of nice hip work. So if you stand with the discs like right next to each other and put one foot on one foot on the other, you can do a whole really nice series of like pliés, so knee bends, and turn the legs in, turn the legs out, and just turn them in and out and all sorts of different combinations and really loosen up those hips. And that whole series you can do also from a lying position on your back with the disc board, which is basically a jump board that you can attach these rotational discs to. And there's other fun exercises that you can do that with, but the standing series is real nice with just the plain rotating discs. So hopefully that gave you some fun things to do with that, give you some more information. Both the functional footprints and the rotational discs are awesome. They're very different, though. I don't think that one really replaces the other. And unfortunately, since they're both fairly pricey, they don't. If you are going to apply on tour, I highly, highly recommend asking for a demonstration on the functional footprints because they will have them there and they will be happy to show you them and let you try them out and talk you through it. And they're fabulous pieces. And they usually have them for sale if you really want to buy some. Same thing with the rotational discs. They usually have them there, and you can try them out and stuff. You can find a lot of material online. I'm sure there's some fabulous YouTube, you know, things that you can do with them and everything, because they've been around a long time, and they're not quite as specialty-ish. They're more group fitness. I mean, I think you could have a blast having those in a group fitness class, but they're more common and such, and the price point has gone way down on those. The big thing with the rotational discs is that if you're looking at buying them, a lot of the cheap ones are very small discs, meaning the diameter. And like if you're trying to do that lying series that I mentioned, you do want them fairly big because you want to get, you know, a decent amount of your body on it, especially if you have large clients. That has been an issue in the past. You don't need a huge thing like, you know, feet wide, but you do need it enough. And I believe, I could be wrong, I think that Balance Body actually has different sizes available, so you can play with that. Okay, so I am going to call it a night for now. I do have one more question in the queue that I will get to. It was a request for me to cue them through, like, iPilates, through the snake and twist, and then the cat walkover. So I will be getting back to that. I didn't miss it. But I do want to mention that the next couple weeks, I'm actually going to be out of town and unavailable, so we are going to take a little break. I think there's going to be 3 weeks that we're going to be on, so I wanted to give you guys warning so you don't think you're crazy, but we will be back at the end of May. So send in your questions, and I will get back to you. If it's something urgent, I will have my email, and I will try to contact you with that. But most of these questions are things that can wait for a few minutes. So I hope you guys have a wonderful night, and don't forget, inspire those clients and let them know that movement should feel good and that everybody deserves that feeling good in their body and not just hating to get up and, you know, walk, that it should be enjoyable to live in their body and move in their body. Have a great night, and I'll talk to you later. Send in those questions.